Blog Talk Radio.
There will be days that just go wrong. Make you wanna holler and shout. Your hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can't get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down in time. Road ain't long. Keep on keeping on. Stand in your way.
They're always saying,
always saying what you cannot do. Mm-hmm. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets too tough, just remember. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't long. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll give you one better time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
Everybody for joining us tonight on Contending for Truth Radio. This is a parental sovereignty radio show. You know, we talk each week on things that affect the parental rights of as we go forward in this great nation. You know, the left has been on a long time attack for our schools. And, you know, Dan Wilson is with us this evening, our co-host from Florida. Dan and I talk a lot about history on Saturday mornings on our Saturday Symposium show. And, you know, that's been true throughout history. We can go back and we can look at nations, and one of the first places they go is for the hearts and the minds of the children. And so that's what this show is about. And tonight we have got an awesome guest. I'm really looking forward to this. Rodney Conover is running for Congress in the 8th District here in California. Now, anybody that knows me know I've been saying for a long time, all my friends back east get to have all the fun, and all I get's an old blog talk radio show. But there's some exciting things going on in California in 2014, and Rodney Conover is going to be one of them. Rodney Conover wrote for Rush Limbaugh. He's wrote for Herman Cain, and of course, we're all Cain supporters here on this show. Rodney's a comedian. He's a funny guy. And let me tell you, he knows how to message. And anybody that knows me knows that that is number one, absolutely number one on my agenda, is being able to message. You know, we spend a lot of time trying to explain to people why what we believe. And we need to spend more time explaining to people why we believe what we believe. And Rodney does a great job of that. I want to give you just an example. Rodney just wrote a piece on Common Core for his website, and I want to read just the first sentence, and this will tell you exactly what I'm talking about. Common Core is as dangerous and destructive to this country as Obamacare, perhaps more, because of the way it infects young people and has the effect of disenfranchising parents from their own offspring. Exactly. The sole purpose of Common Core, the sole purpose, folks, is to get between you and your children. Get between you and your children. So I'm excited. We've got Dan Wilson down in Florida, our co-host, and we've got Jennifer Montrose down in Alabama, which is rocking on, and Rodney Stanhope out here in California is busy this evening for the time being. We'll hope to bring him on. So, Dan, I'll pass it to you real quick for some opening remarks, and then I'll let you pass it to Jen, and then we're going to throw Rodney Conover right into the mix and have a great discussion tonight. Dan Wilson, we missed you last week. You've been having some health problems. It's good to have you here tonight. How are you feeling, my friend?
I'm getting better every day, and slowly but surely I'm returning back to my old self. And, missed you guys last week, and I apologize. I feel terrible. It's nice to be back, and speaking of Common Core here in Florida, we are about to institute it next year, but it's on hold right now because several superintendents stood up and said, wait a minute. So there is hope that some states are going to start standing up against this, and I'm praying each day, and everybody I talk to here in Florida, I inform them of what Common Core truly is. Nothing short of Hitler Youth, and I'm furious about it. My granddaughter's in first grade, going into second next year, so a lot's riding on this to me, and I do not want to see Common Core here in Florida. And it's a tragedy, so I'm looking forward to hearing everything that Rodney's saying about it. And that's about it for the opening, and I'll pass it over to Jennifer.
Well, it's critical in 2014, I believe, that we turn the whole house true red. We've got to do this. We've got to stop Nancy Pelosi from getting the gavel in 2014. She has sworn to do this, and I'm looking here on the website, and I'm looking at the issues. You know, one of the things I think is key, we've got to do what we can to protect the Constitution. We've got many things that are happening now that seem to be factually tearing it down. You know, we've done some horrible things. This latest shenanigans with Israel is an insult to the country. I believe that, you know, I was born and raised in here in the United States. I think that we don't need to sit down and take it anymore. It's time that we get off the couch, get out in the street, and become activists and do what is necessary. There is somebody in your state right now running for Congress for 2014 that is a good, solid conservative. You need to find out who that person is and do everything you can to help get them elected. And I believe that we have here tonight, Rodney Lee Conover, who, from what I can tell, is somebody that we need to get behind wholeheartedly. You've got every congressional race. They're all running for the same office, just different districts. And we've got to do what we can to fight, because we have people in Washington who are not fighting for our rights. You know, and if Nancy Pelosi gets the gavel, if she gets what she wants, if Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and Barbara Boxer get their way, then we will have another 4 years of misery, and it'll just keep going down and down. 2014 is very, very important for Senate and House. U.S. Senate, U.S. Congressional, we've got to. I know that there are many people right now that would rather be sitting at home watching Dancing with the Stars. There is a time and place for that. But right now, I mean, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine today who is a Navy vet that had gone to get checked out, and they were told that they've got, you know, redness on their neck, and they said if it comes out negative, then we can tell you. But if not, then we can't say anything. And I'm like, this is a woman who fought for our country, to fight for our freedoms, a Navy vet. And that's the kind of treatment that we get. I have seen so much happen in these last few years that have just been awful. I mean, can't even get straight answers about Benghazi. You know, there's so much going on today. You know, and I am not a proponent of big government. I think that the less we have government involved, the better off we are. You know, limited government, personal responsibility, respect for life, you know, respect for the Constitution. Those are the kinds of principles that I stand for, and I believe that there's candidates out there in every district in every state that believe in those same values. And we need to figure out who they are, and we need to fight hard for them. And I believe tonight we have on Parental Sovereignty Radio, Rodney Lee Conover is a perfect example of that. Scott?
Amen, Jennifer. And with no further ado, we're going to get straight into Rodney. Rodney, I'm really excited to have you on, and I'm going to tell you, there's two reasons. Number one, my most important qualification for a candidate is somebody that can change minds and hearts of their constituents. And the second thing that's most important to me is I need to have confidence that the person that goes into Washington, D.C., when they come back home, they're the same person. Because we got a lot of people out there like Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander just in Tennessee alone who have gone to Washington, D.C., and they've gotten played in the money game. You know, I sit and I watch your campaign commercial with the El Camino, and let me tell you something. You give me full confidence that that's who I'm going to be sending to Washington, D.C. when we get you there. And I'm excited about that. I'm going to pass it over to you, Rodney, and let you tell, just take the reins for a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your background and the things that you've done and a little bit about your campaign. And then we'll go on a little bit of discussion a little bit later and talk about the issues. Rodney Conover, welcome to Contending for Truth Radio.
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I have I've been doing a lot of these shows lately, and it's really interesting to hear different people from different regions of the country, and it plays. And I bring that up because it's important when you talk about the subject of education. It's especially pertinent to the subject of education, and we're talking about Common Core tonight. Because education has always been developed, implemented, and taught at the local level. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that, but I believe, and history tells us, that the main reason for that is very simple. It's because that's what works best. And conservatism, as far as I'm concerned, I've boiled it down for everybody. This is what I'm the king at, is I distill everything down into very short sentences. Conservatism is the history of what works. Okay? I wrote that. Conservatism is the history of what works. And this is what gets liberals all crazy. Because anyone, and you guys know this more than anybody, anyone who has spent 20 minutes debating with a liberal knows that the thing that bothers them the most is a clear set of facts. Nothing drives a liberal up the wall, over the wall, and into the river like a clear set of facts. Because that's what conservatism is. It's a mere set of facts based on the trial and error of the human experience. And the short way of saying that is that it's the history of what has worked. And that is really important when it comes to the subject of education, because it's what works. And you know what? Not what works here is not necessarily what works best over there, or over here, or over in that place. That's why education has always been local. And it's important that we keep it local. Why? Because then you have a community. You have a community of teachers, you have a community of parents, and they have their input, and you have innovation, and you have regional input, you have regional differences. And kids learn. It's always been that way, and that's the best way. Now, Common Core comes along. What does it do? Well, of course, it seeks to make one curriculum for everybody. It seeks to standardize, if you will, the entire education system for the entire nation. In other words, it makes one standard for all states. But what does it really do? What it really does is it removes competition, it removes innovation, it removes input from parents, it removes choice, okay? There's the key. It removes the choice, and it puts that choice squarely into the hands of who? Big government, central planners. And it takes away that the most important element of education, and that is the responsibility of any sort of accountability. Am I on track so far?
I think you're nailing it right down the line, Rodney. And you know what? It's so true. And one of the things that proves what you just said to be true is have an argument with a liberal. They will run from facts like ants running from fire. And how do they do that? They use ad hominem attacks. They call names.
Yeah.
We see it every day. We can watch it. All you got to do is go on the internet and go to the articles, go to the discussions at the bottom of an article, and look and see how the liberals argue. They don't sit down with facts. They go right in and do it. You know, Rodney, I want to ask you a little bit about your background. You've got
sure.
a fascinating background. I looked you up, and what I see a background that has prepared you for the one important thing in Congress, and that's standing in front of your peers and convincing them that you are right. You know, we spend a lot of time putting people in Congress and putting people in the Senate, putting people in the White House, and they spend a lot of time doing things we don't see a lot. But one of your main jobs, we know from the summer of 1787, what did those guys do? They stood in there and debated, and they stood in there and tried to get their point across. And you've got a great history of experience in preparing you for what I believe, is the most important part of Congress. So I want to throw it to that a little bit to you. And then as soon as you're done, I'll throw you to Dan for a question or two, and to Jennifer, and we'll just keep going. Go ahead, Rodney.
Well, it's funny that we're talking about this phenomena of ad hominem attack, because I do have a, I think it's a, it's kind of a bizarre storied background. I feel very fortunate in that background. It's not for the faint of heart, I'll tell you that. I don't think I would do it again. If I were to play my life over, I don't think I would choose to do it the same way, because I did kind of get through life just not knowing what was going to happen to me. But I'm sure glad I did it once, because you're right. It did prepare me. I've been training for this job my entire life, and I didn't even know it. When people attack me, they have no idea that I have been attacked by the best. I have been attacked by drunk college kids in a nightclub. So if they think they can attack me from any sort of political angle, they've got something coming, because ad hominem attacks don't work on me. Now, most people are way too polite to deal with ad hominem attacks, and so these liberals who immediately call you a racist, they call you a homophobe, they say you hate older people, you hate this person, you hate teachers, you hate policemen. Well, most conservatives, most Republicans are polite. They're good, nice people. Well, I'm a good, nice people too. I just happen to know how to deal with people like that, and because I'm trained and I've been in situations where I didn't get paid unless I dealt with people like that. So you're right. When they come after me, they just are unarmed. They don't have a chance. And I am not going to stand there. And I haven't stood there. Listen, I was on a radio show for 8 years. I co-hosted a radio show on Sirius XM where I was the lone conservative. And I was surrounded by sometimes the most vile people on the left and sometimes on the far left. And I was in a building full of liberals, most of them nice people, don't get me wrong. But we would have guests, and we would have people come in the studio that just hated you. I mean, there was just no middle ground. There was no debate. There was no reason. You know, there was no facts there. And it was just 100-1, and I consider that a fair fight. I have no problem with it. So, yeah, I've been training for this for a long time, and I am not polite. As soon as the surface of that water is broken, I'm no longer polite. Now, if the surface of that water is never broken, I'm a very polite person. I'm a heck of a nice guy, and you'll find me to be that. But I tell you, last week, or actually it's kind of been 2 weeks now, I was out in Florida. I was out in Palm Beach at this really big, it was this really great meeting. It's called Restoration Weekend. And people in Florida know about it. It's David Horowitz puts it on. And I met Ted Cruz for the first time. And I actually made some jokes at his expense. I was fortunate enough to speak there, and I made a few Ted Cruz cracks. And fortunately, he laughed really hard, and we had dinner later, and he shook my hand, and he congratulated me, and it was just really great for me. And he thanked me. He thanked me for, I want to get the words right, because it was just so great what he said to me. He thanked me for sticking my neck out. That's what he said to me. He said, thanks for sticking your neck out, for helping me. And he was saying helping him, you know, because he knew that last summer I had fought all summer to get not just my representative in the House, but all representatives and anybody who would actually listen to try and defund, get behind the cause to defund Obamacare. Unfortunately, that effort failed, in part due to representatives like the one we have in the 8th District that voted to fully fund Obamacare, and people are now feeling the unfortunate effects of it. But I tell you, I was so proud to have him shake my hand and say that to me. I felt, I got all bent out of shape. I got all teary-eyed, and I realized, now here's a guy. There's the real deal. I think I'm a tough guy, but here's the guy. When I get to Washington, and I told him, I said, as soon as I'm elected, sir, I'm going to come and see you if that's okay. And he smiled at me and he said, you bet, you come and see me. And so when people ask me, what am I going to do when I get to Washington? I tell them, I say, I'm going to go see Ted Cruz. That's what I'm going to do. And people seem pretty happy with that. So that's the first thing I'm going to do. Now, insofar as the subject matter of, you know, what happens to people when they go to Washington, you know, I've never been in elected office in Washington, but I have worked on a number of campaigns, and I've been on the inside a couple of times. I was on the inside on Herman Cain's campaign, for instance, and the Herman Cain campaign was a unique campaign in that he got very popular very quickly, and as you all know, there was a very high amount of drama and, I would say, violent pressure brought upon him because of his race and because of his perceived danger of being able to become president. And they went after him like nobody's business. And you talk about thugs from Chicago. They bared their teeth and they went after Herman Cain and they got him. He was the first primary candidate to receive 24/7 Secret Service protection for him and his extended family and their extended family in the history of the United States, except for Hillary Clinton, who was getting it because she was first lady. Okay, she would have gotten it anyway. So he was the first primary candidate to receive that. Now, imagine the threats that must have been coming his way in order for him to receive that. Now, I know what those threats were, and I'm not going to tell you what they are, but imagine what it must have been. Now, the only thing to come of that, which was cool, was that I got to roll with the Secret Service. And I could tell you some really cool stories about rolling with the Secret Service. But besides that, there was nothing cool about it. And you realize what a bunch of vicious, win-at-all-cost, power-hungry, horrible people there are in this business, and especially today, when you can go after a gentle soul like Herman Cain. And, you know, I don't know if he was going to win or not, but I'll tell you what, we had just won the Florida straw poll, and my man was on a roll, I can tell you that much. And people think that he quit the race because of all this chatter about all these shenanigans with women, and that, I'm not going to tell you anything more, but I will tell you this, that is not the truth. He quit for other reasons, and that's sad. So I do have some inside knowledge, if you will, but other than that, no, I don't. I don't have inside knowledge of Washington. I do not know why people of modest means go to Washington, they serve 4 or 5 terms, and they suddenly are worth multiple millions of dollars and then go to work for the companies that they just got done passing legislation for. I don't know why that is the rule and not the exception. Unfortunately, that is the rule. You got guys, and then you have extreme versions of that. You have Dianne Feinstein, whose husband just got hundreds of millions of dollars in a no-bid contract selling the real estate for the post office. They're selling off all this real estate. Dianne Feinstein's husband got that contract, in a no-bid contract, and how does that happen? And when they asked her, how does that happen, she said, well, I don't discuss business with my husband. That is the arrogance that goes on in this country. I don't discuss business with my husband. You didn't discuss that with your husband? That just happened? No, that didn't just happen, and we all know it. Now, the reason people are not in prison for bribery is because they are, in fact, the ones making the rules about what's bribery and what isn't bribery, which brings me to the core of the question. Rodney, how are you going to avoid that? In fact, last night I was on a show, and that was the first question. It kind of threw me for a loop. The first caller said, Rodney, how are you? What are you doing to prepare yourself for that temptation, and how are you going to avoid that? And I had to think a little bit because I really hadn't been presented with that question, and I hadn't thought about it at all. And, you know, the first time I was in a political debate, I opened up with, I said to the audience, I said, do me a favor, everybody, please, whatever you do, don't use this debate to make your decision about who to vote for, because debates are BS. They really are. You don't want to pick the best debater to be the president or to be the congressman or be the whatever. You don't want to use a debate because you're picking the guy that has the snappiest answers. That's how we get in trouble, okay? Because then you're going to get the guy that can read the teleprompter the best. You get the guy, the Bill Clintons of the world. Don't do it. Figure out the guy who will be the best leader, the guy with the best position, the guy who you feel may be the most honest. And that might be the best debater, but don't just pick the guy who has the best joke, the best comeback, the best gotcha. You know, Rick Perry fell out of favor with the American public because he forgot the Department of Energy. You remember he had that 20 seconds where it slipped his mind. Well, so what? Does that mean the man is not a good leader? I believe you hire a staff to, one guy will lean over and say, Department of Energy. I mean, it doesn't mean you're going to be a bad. Look what he's doing with Texas. It's phenomenal. Because he couldn't remember the Department of Energy didn't make him a bad governor of Texas, it seems to me. So you see, we've got to change the way we're thinking about how we pick leaders. And my answer finally came out regarding how am I going to get to Washington and not become corrupt. See, I use words like corrupt and liar and bribe. And, you know, I don't sugarcoat them, and I hope I never sugarcoat these words, and I'm certainly not going to tonight. And I said this. I was in the entertainment side of politics for 20 years, and I did a lot in the straight entertainment business. And even though I might have been entertaining troops, or I might have been writing the Rush Limbaugh show, or writing material for entertainment figures or pundits, it still was entertainment. Talk radio is entertainment. What we're doing right now is entertainment. People are listening, sure, to be informed, but it's still because they want to pass the time and be, you know, educated and entertained to a certain degree. But while I was doing that, I think I met the most unsavory character just anybody could ever meet, short of being in prison. And I came through that pipe okay. Believe me, I'm not corrupt, and I'm not a multimillionaire. I didn't steal anybody's money. And I think I can get through Washington and not have that happen to me. I honestly believe that I don't have to prepare myself for Washington. Because one of the things that really thrills me is to expose people for the hypocrites that they are. I had breakfast with a guy named James O'Keefe when I was at the Restoration Weekend. Just to remind people, James O'Keefe is the young man who runs around with a candid camera style approach and exposes corruption all over the country. He brought down the president of NPR. He almost single-handedly brought down, help me out with the organization, Obama's old organization.
Acorn.
I'm sorry? Yeah, Acorn. And he's most recently exposed this whole shenanigans going on with Obamacare. And the guy is just amazing. And he's my hero. I mean, I want to be the James O'Keefe of Congress. I want to wear a pair of Google glasses while I'm going to have a webcam in my office if they'll let me. I want to have a Facebook page dedicated to lobbyists who try and bribe me. I mean, I want to shake things up, and I'm going to use C-SPAN as my personal nightclub, and I'm going to heckle people. And I'm telling you, I am so tired of this disconnect that the American people have with their so-called leaders. I mean, I don't know if we can call them leaders, or I don't know what the right name is. I'll just say representatives. But let me ask you guys, do you know what's going on in Washington? I mean, we pay attention. We don't even know what's going on. I pay really close attention to politics, and I have no idea who writes these bills. I have no idea how they get negotiated and passed. I don't know who's reading them. I don't know who's writing them. I don't know how the heck they get through, and I don't know how or if they're going to be enforced. The American people have zero connection to the people who are running things, and that is the core of what's wrong. And the president spoke a lot about being transparent, and clearly he is the least transparent person that has ever held that office. I know I got off track a little bit about my background, but it just kind of led me there. I am running for Congress for many reasons, but here's the main reason. I want to be exempted from Obamacare, all right? That's my main reason. That was a little bit of a joke. You guys are supposed to laugh a little bit about at that. Now, when I get there, I'm going to try and get you guys exempted from Obamacare as well. But I do believe that Common Core is, as you said in the opening, is every bit as dangerous as Obamacare, because it is a disease, and it does seek to disenfranchise parents from kids, and it is very, I don't know if nefarious is a tough enough word for it. But the thing about Common Core, which is going on right now, is that a lot of people are warning of the dangers of it. And I don't take issue with that. I think it's great. I think it's fine. And the more people that warn about it is good. But I do think that we get caught up a little bit too much in the minutia of Common Core. You know, what it's teaching, what it's saying. You know, people, can you believe this 2 + 2 = 5? And they're teaching the about Mesopotamia and da-da-da. And I always say, listen, forget about it. Forget about the details of Common Core, and let's focus on the big picture. Because once it becomes law, once it becomes mandatory, once it gets its tentacles into you, once it's entrenched, that's all going to change. It's all going to be irrelevant. I'm telling you, just like Obamacare is going to morph into a single payer, Common Core will morph into something completely different, and it will be unrecognizable. So let's keep our eye on the giant prize, or giant prize, not a prize, on the giant picture, which can be summed up by Hillary Clinton. It takes a village, okay? It takes a village. That says it all. They want the village raising your kid and not you. But back to me. I'm going to like this real quickly. In 1987 or something like that, a long time ago, I got my first 2-week vacation from my first real job. And I'd never had a 2-week vacation. I don't even know what it was. I didn't want a 2-week. I was working on commission. They said, no, you got to take a 2-week vacation. It's mandatory. I said, all right. And you know what I did? I watched the Iran-Contra hearings. That was my idea of a vacation. And I saw Oliver North raise his hand and promise to tell the good, the bad, and the ugly. Do you guys remember that? And he told Congress to stick it. And I became thrilled. I was out of my mind. I just walked around the room going, I can't believe there's somebody out there like me. And I wanted to be him. I wanted to be Oliver North. And then, you know, that introduced me to Rush Limbaugh. I worked for him for 6 years. I got introduced to a guy named Burt Prelutsky, who was an Emmy Award winner, Emmy Award winning writer for the show MASH, and he convinced me to become a stand-up comic and, you know, be conservative. And Burt is a big-time conservative, and, you know, I just, all my dreams came true. And I kept a hand in politics. I'm just the luckiest guy on earth. I got to go all over the world. making bad television shows and entertaining people and troops. And I went on my first USO tour in 1989, and, you know, I just never looked back. And many people, my friend Ann Coulter, everybody, Herman Cain, everyone to a man, always encouraged me to run for office. And at the end of last summer, when it was clear that my representative, my congressman, was not going to do a thing about defunding Obamacare, and he's a Republican, and when he said that he was for legalizing millions of undocumented Democrats into this district, and when he voted against an amendment which would have curbed domestic surveillance by, you know, increasing number, by this increasing scope of domestic surveillance. Now, I'm for absolutely fighting terrorism. Nobody is bigger on fighting terrorism than yours truly. But this amount of power over me, trampling on my Fourth, Fifth, Tenth Amendment rights, is just out of whack. You don't need to grab my telephone calls, my emails, my Facebook friends to do that. And I'm against it. And my opponent is for it. My opponent wants to track my every step 5 feet out of my front door. And yet they can't catch two kids from Chechnya when they got their names, their address, their Social Security number. Okay? I think it's about controlling the populace, and I'm not paranoid. I'm just telling you what I really believe is going on. And we at least need to start looking at investigating and curbing some of these practices that's going on with the NSA and some of the other departments. Now, if you think I'm nuts, look no further than Ms. Lois Lerner, who has admitted that the IRS has used political power to deny the civil rights of people who associate themselves with the word patriot, Tea Party, conservative, Christian, and other keywords that they've decided is bad for the current administration. That's fact. That is not conjecture on my part. These are the facts. And why she isn't in prison is only because we have an attorney general that has no desire to bring any sort of justice to this country. So the idea that other departments will take this massive amount of information and not use it for nefarious purposes is counterintuitive to me. And my representative has no desire to even look into it. And when he casts that vote to fully fund Obamacare and then exempt himself from it, folks, that is disgraceful. That is fascist. And I don't use that word lightly. I grew up in an Orthodox neighborhood where old people had tattoos on their arms, and they didn't say mom. Do you know what I'm talking about? And I'm telling you, it's enough to make me nuts. And I'm running. And I'm running for all of the amendments in the Bill of Rights, not just cafeteria style. The first, the second, the fourth, the tenth, all of them. And that's my story. We'll be right back. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was on AM radio there for a second.
Well, you know, let me tell you, I'm broadcasting live from my aunt's living room this evening down in Costa Mesa. And when we get you elected for Congress, we want to exempt her from Obamacare, too. We want to make sure we throw that in. I'm down here having a great time at my aunt's. We've got a close family, and we've had some really good times. You know, Rodney, I just have to say ditto, ditto, ditto to everything you said. And I'll tell you, the one thing that you said that stuck it in my craw all the way through, I was still thinking about it at the end, and you kind of almost came right back to it, is a Facebook page exposing all the lobbyists trying to come in and bribe you. Because that's what I'm talking about. I want to tell you, just ditto, everything you said. It's right down the line. It's exactly what I'm talking about. A lot of times, you know, we get so stuck in the fringe of the issues and we miss the big picture. We miss the big picture with Obamacare. It wasn't about insuring a bunch of people. It was about a giant takeover of our health insurance so that we could slowly but surely get it pushed into a single payer. The same thing with Obamacare. With Common Core, their purpose isn't to put us on a common thread of curriculum. We've had that for a long time. In the fifth grade, you learn states and capitals. In the eighth grade, you learn Constitution. In the eighth grade, you start to learn algebra. We've already had that. I do want to pass it on down. Dan, I'll pass it to you to have a little bit of discussion with Rodney, ask some questions, and then I'll let you pass it on to Jennifer, and I'm going to sit here and listen. And when Jennifer and Rodney are done, we'll bring it back around, and we'll just keep going. Dan Wilson down in Port Richey, Florida.
Hi, Rodney. How are you today? And wonderful to have you on the show.
Hi, Dan. You're in Port Richey?
Port Richey, yeah, and I moved here from Palm Springs. And,
oh, terrific. That's almost in my district. It's very close, just a couple inches away.
Mm-hmm. We're just on the border.
Yep.
And I used to race out of San Diego.
Sailboats. I love San Diego. Love it.
Oh, best climate in the world. And it's,
you got that right.
California is one of the most beautiful states I've ever been in, so I can see why you're there. And politics was one of the reasons I left California, because it was so frustrating.
When I got here, it was beautiful. I mean, when I got here, California, my dreams were waiting for me when I got here, I think in 1986. And something happened, man. I mean, this place just got taken over.
Oh, after Wilson,
things
went downhill.
Well, you got that right.
So I got really frustrated with it, and Palm Springs slowly morphed from a very conservative community. Everything from L.A. just kind of migrated into Palm Springs.
And, right.
It just, you know, I have nothing bad to say about gay people, but when they take over a community and force it on other people is when I have a problem, because I don't force my sexual opinion on them, and I don't want them to force it on me. You know,
right.
What you do in your bedroom is your decision, not mine. That and my father lives over down in Punta Gorda, which is where Charlie hit. For 5 days I couldn't get a hold of him, and I decided family was more important than being where I wanted to be, so I packed up.
My mom is down in Naples.
Oh, so next door to my dad.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I felt it was terrible living so far away. And,
when that happened, I was so frightened from my mom, and I was able to fly into Orlando and rent a car and zipped down to Naples. I got in just like in that window. And I popped her in my car, and we drove up to Atlanta, and it was just got out just in time. I was just so, I don't know, that was really a frightening time. Her house didn't get damaged at all. I could have left her there, but still, I was pretty wigged out.
Well, the police station blew away at 200 mile an hour gust, and my dad lost his pool cage, as well as the solar panels that ran the pool heater. Nothing major, but the house, he was on the coast. So
he
moved into his friend's house, which was a little bit inland, and they lost the roof. So it was pretty close. So, you know, I said, I can't be 2,400 miles away.
Right.
So I packed up and now I live about 100 miles away because I chose the Nature Coast. It's beautiful up here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but as, you know, politically I wasn't really, really involved until Herman Cain.
Uh-huh.
And during the Herman Cain campaign, he went after the grassroots efforts, and I loved it. I loved that idea, and I loved how down-to-earth he was. I thought he was accessible, and I thought he had a lot of good ideas that, as an econ major in college, you know, flat tax, fair tax,
right,
is where we should be trying to get to.
Sure.
Then, as everybody would, you know, will contest, that was on the train, Cain, when he had dropped out of office, out of the campaign, there was so much momentum going that many of us never decided to get off.
Yeah.
We just migrated, you know, to news.
It was very disappointing, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we were very disappointed.
Who did you go for after Cain? Where did you go? Who did you migrate to?
I went
to?
After Newt Gingrich. Okay. My first election that I voted in was Reagan.
Uh-huh.
And since then, I've been so disappointed. And I know that Newt worked very close with Reagan. And Reagan was the only, Gingrich was the only person Reagan mentioned in his autobiography.
Right.
And Newt, like me, is a history fan.
That's right.
And he had a lot of good things to say. He was the only person in recent history who was able to bring both sides of the House together and balance the budget. And in a time when you had a spendthrift as president, that was some undertaking. And how did
that election in 1994 was, I mean, they talk about the 2010 election, and of course that was historic, and that was, I mean, that was something else. But that election in 1994, that was crazy. I mean, it was just nutty. And that whole Contract with America thing, I was so thrilled about it. And there was much made of that, and there was a lot of derisive comments and a lot of derisive stuff by the press and by the Democrats regarding that. But that's something that people really responded to, and that was Gingrich's, you know, that was his baby.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. And people ask me why I'm still 100% behind Gingrich. And it's because he knows the job. And if anybody can get the job done and bring the nation back together, it's him. But the problem is so much damage was done by Pelosi and Dole. The combination that I don't see, that would be a real undertaking to undo, because there's a lot of people who still believe it, even though it was proven that this was not, it was nothing but allegations. So I was furious, and I'm still furious that a person who was very able to run this country is not allowed to because of propaganda, just like Herman Cain.
Right.
There was a bunch of anybody with half a brain could see right through what was going on. I mean,
when you have a guy like David Axelrod, who all of a sudden they show some woman, and there's this and there's that, and then his attorney is Gloria Allred. I mean, just that alone is the perfect storm of BS. But throw in the fact that this woman lives a couple doors down in an apartment from David Axelrod. He found her in his own building. I mean, that to me is not only is it lazy, but it just tells you that they don't care how obvious it is, because they know the press is going to sell it for them. They know how in the tank the press is. They're laughing about it. They've got to be laughing about it. They got to pull this woman out and say, well, wait a minute, she lives a couple doors down from you, David. I mean, isn't that going to be pretty obvious? And they just throw their heads back. They throw their heads back and they laugh because they go, who cares? The press is going to sell this for us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree
well,
with you.
Here's something I think is real key. We have got to, as Americans, we need to stand up like Frederick Douglass did. Face it, fight it, and fix it. We know that progressives have been on the move, and they've become extremely arrogant, because when you go to the Democratic website, it says, for 200 years, we have been champions of civil rights, and it goes on to explain, you know, in detail, that 200 years ago, we were still in, you know, especially down in the South, I mean, slavery was still allowed, and the Democrats were fighting to keep it that way. And one of the things that I know that we've been talking about is how are we going to defeat the class warfare tax, the media propaganda that's out there. The progressives have gotten so arrogant with it, and they have taken the low information voters and they have dumbed them down and have convinced people to believe just because a Democrat says it's so, then that means it's true. People don't even realize that Governor George Wallace here in Alabama, where I live,
sure,
was a Democrat. And I was talking to somebody earlier today about we've got to have politicians that are going to take a stand for conservative values, people that are going to stand up like Douglass did and fight, and then be willing to hold feet to the fire once they get into office. You know, he did not just support Lincoln, and then Lincoln got in as president, and he left him alone. You know, that's one of the things I think is the issue. We have people that flip-flop. They join the ranks of the Republican Party for the simple fact that they know that they have a chance of getting elected in certain districts, and then when they get in there, people forget to look at the voting record. And I'm really grateful to see that you're out there fighting a good fight to take this challenge on. We need more conservatives out there willing to do what you have done. I know that we've had many, many candidates out there that have had to go through a lot, you know, with the media and that sort of thing. I was right there with you, with Herman Cain. We all were. Those of us that are on this call, I know, we fought a good fight. We've got to get our grassroots army. You know, I support what the Tea Party stands for. You know, I support the Constitution wholeheartedly. You know, I think at the end of the day, you know, we've got to have a solution on how to, what's the messaging for this? What are we going to do? What is the answer to defeating the media propaganda, the class warfare attacks? Because if we can't do that, we're toast again. I know that a top leading official in the NAACP called K. Carl Smith, who's the founder of the Frederick Douglass Republicans, and said that if this Frederick Douglass Republican methodology, if that message gets out on a national level, the Democratic Party would be toast. And you'll notice that we have one of our original Republicans in the party, Frederick Douglass, runaway slave, you know, fought so hard for our freedom. And we need to get that same kind of mentality back. Face it, fight it, fix it.
Well, there is, I think you had mentioned this earlier about, you know, getting off the couch. When I In 2009, when I retired from the entertainment business in 2008, and I was doing nothing but politics. I went into politics full time, even though I'd always had my hand in politics for 25 years. I've dropped everything having to do with entertainment that wasn't politically connected in 2008. So 2009, I found myself, for some reason, I found myself busier than I'd ever been before. I don't know if it was coincidence or what, but everybody was calling. You know, Sarah Palin, Andrew Breitbart, everyone, Herman Cain. Things were going crazy. And I wasn't sure why, but it was the advent of the Tea Party. Nobody really knew it because the phrase hadn't even been coined. And yet, when it finally had and things started really grumbling, immediately, it didn't take 2 seconds for the media and the Democrats to get their marching orders, their talking points in a row, in a line, and distributed, and out on the Sunday shows, and just everybody had them. And it was to call us conservatives, people that were getting off the couch, to call us phonies. Oh, this is just a phony. They used the word astroturf because they thought that was funny. Instead of saying grassroots, they said astroturf. Oh, that was funny. It's a bunch of phonies. In other words, it's not grassroots. It's not real. It's not real people. It's just a bunch of phony, rich Republicans, insert rich Republican name here. And therefore, it's nothing to worry about. They're trying to discourage folks like you and I, everybody on this call, everybody on the show, by calling us phonies. In other words, trying to convince us that we did not have our convictions. Well, how can you convince us we don't have convictions? That's ridiculous. That's like President Obama trying to convince people that their premiums aren't really going up. Well, I just got a letter that says my premiums are going up, and you're telling me my premiums aren't going up. That's ridiculous. There are certain things you can't do with the media and with talking points. Now, there's a lot that you can do, but there's certain things you can't do. You cannot tell someone their convictions are phony because that's their convictions. You can't tell them you won't lose your insurance if you just got a letter that says you lost your insurance. Now, I had a really funny line in my speech at Restoration, and I said, after 12 years, I lost my insurance. I lost the insurance I had for 12 years. And you know how I found out? I got a letter from my insurance company that said, as of October 1st, I would no longer like my plan. And it got a huge laugh. But that's what they're trying to tell us. Oh, you lost it because you didn't like it. It was substandard. What are you talking about? I loved it. I had it for 12 years. It's insanity what they're trying to sell. So, I guess what I'm trying to say is, all we have to do is what you are suggesting, and I'll make it a little more crude if you don't mind, and that's get off your ass. Now, I knew it was going to happen in 2010 for two reasons. Number one, I was hooked up with a guy named Andy Breitbart. And if you're next to him, you know things are going to happen. But the real reason I knew it was going to happen was because of my father. My dad, at most, yelled at the television. And that was even rare. But my dad went to a Tea Party rally. I didn't even know it. You know, he lived in Chicago. And I don't know why I was back there, but I went back there for something. It was a speech or a rally or something. And I was talking to him about something, the Cubs or something. And he said, I was blah, 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 and I was here and I did that. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I was there for that Tea Party thing. I said, you went to a Tea Party speech? What were you doing there?
He said, I was at the Tea Party rally. I was there for the speech. I said, you went to a rally. You just went to a rally just to go and hear it? He said, yeah. And I was shocked. And at that moment, I knew. And I said to my dad, I said, there's going to be a huge tidal wave of Republicans in getting elected to office next year. I said, this is it. I am so happy. Because when my dad gets out of his lazy boy and goes to a Tea Party rally, believe me, this country is PO'd, and they're ready to rock. And I think 2014 is going to make 2010 look like child's play. I really do.
Amen.
And the reason I think that is look at how the Democrats are acting. Look at their talking points. Can you imagine saying, I mean, there's hubbub, of course, saying the president says, well, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan, period. Can you imagine them coming out and saying, well, that wasn't a lie. What he really said was blah, blah, blah. Can you imagine the temerity of people that would actually say that he actually was saying something else? I mean, when I was growing up, if you ran down a hill and then you walked down a hill and your mom said, did you run down that hill? And you said, no, Mom, I walked down that hill. You were lying, okay? You weren't you weren't misspeaking. You were lying. You know, technically, you did walk down the hill. But when your mom asked you, did you run down the hill? The answer is yes, I ran down the hill. Not, no, I walked down the hill. In other words, this guy's a liar. And he knew he was lying at the time. And the fact that they have to resort to this kind of public lying tells you one thing. They're on the run. And 2014, God help us, people like me get in office, because things are going to shake. And it's not going to be these squishy people like we got in this district now. Can you imagine these people voting for something to fund Obamacare when they know that they themselves don't have to live under it? Do you guys remember the movie 1984 or Animal Farm? Is it that far? Is that concept that far from that movie?
I remember reading the book. I mean, both. And
you have leaders passing a piece of legislation that controls your health care, but not theirs? I mean, it seems like a nightmare. It seems like something that could not happen in this country. Bizarre.
You know, it is bizarre, Rodney, and you've been using some of my words, and the last one you used was squishy. I think that's been our problem in California. And Dan and Jennifer will recognize that word. I'm always talking about the squishy candidates we give in California, which is the reason why we're at where we're at. You know, Rodney, there's certain things about campaigns that I love. And one of the things is message. And you just hit on something that was key with your dad. And I've seen the exact same thing on my end out here in California. I have, since I was in high school, been interested in politics. I loved talking politics. I loved watching the news and current events. My grandmother inspired me to that. Ronald Reagan inspired me to that. And my little sister, who's 4.5 years younger than I am, has always sat and listened, agreed with me, shook her head, and put up with it until Barack Obama was elected. And then when Barack Obama was elected, she started paying attention. And then let me tell you, Common Core turned her into a political activist. This last few months, she's been involved with the local fighting of the Common Core in our local school district. If anybody would have told me 10 years ago that my little sister would be politically active, I would have told them that they were absolutely nuts, off their rocker, and were just out of league, because my little sister would never do that. But I've sat and watched her go from somebody who just put up with my excitement about politics and patted her brother on the back and said, yeah, I agree with you, yeah, and she's always voted when she had a, you know, she's been that kind of a person, but never to discuss it, never to bring it up. She talks about politics at work. She talks about politics to her husband. She brings up politics with me, and that's how I know, Rodney, you're onto something. And I've been saying that for a long time. My sister is a huge sign that the people that aren't normally paying attention to politics, they're waking them up. And I have to agree with you. We're on the end of a tidal wave. I'm excited to support you because I'm a firm believer that we can have you in Washington, D.C. By the beginning of 2015. And it's going to be because of these things. The left has given us every snowball we could need in this fight. And you're campaigning on four of them. You've told me that. Obamacare, Common Core, immigration, and gun control. And I know for a fact that the majority of the American people agree with you on your positions. That's why the left does what they do to keep us off of discussing those issues. But I say every week on the show, it's going to be up to our candidates in 2014 to get the message out. We know we're not going to do it through the media. We know CNN isn't going to give the message out. We know that MSNBC isn't going to get the message out. We know that the news media, we know that television, you know, I love cop shows. I love cop shows. I love cop dramas. And, you know, I sit and watch them, and I see the socialism that's being pushed in the background on them.
Right.
Our media is not going to get it out. It's going to be up to candidates like you to get out, talk to the constituents, and change hearts and minds. And I'm excited. I'm even more excited than I was before. You know, I want us to go back to something that you brought up, and I want us to kind of pass this around a little bit. You talked about Hillary Clinton and It Takes a Village. Because we have used as our I don't know what you would call it. There's got to be a word for it, but I've got the top of the show page, and this was a quote that Melissa Perry put on MSNBC as an ad. They used it to promote MSNBC. I know you're familiar with it. We've always had a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. And, you know, that's in definition, Hillary's It Takes a Village. And it's, you know, I don't cut, but that is bull crap. That is bull crap. This is Parental Sovereignty Radio. And, you know, most people know that I'm helping raise my three nieces, my three beautiful nieces. And, you know, there is a concept that we have had for a long time in this country that those kids are our kids and we've got the right to raise them. And our schools have been doing Common Core-like things for a long time. This Common Core is just designed to institutionalize what's been going on in our schools for a couple of decades now, slowly but surely. They infiltrate schools that way. I want to kind of that background. I want you to just expound on it a little bit, and I know that this is a subject that is near and dear to Jennifer and Dan, so I want to throw that out there and let the conversation go about that a little bit, and then we'll be getting close to time to wind down the show, and we'll do some closing remarks, but I want to throw that back at you for your comments.
Okay, do you want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead, Rodney. Go ahead and start.
Okay. Well, listen, as you said, it's been going on a long time. Socialists, leftists, communists, they've been talking about this forever because they know, and Karl Marx, I'm going to paraphrase, and he said it straight out, got to get those kids. You know, they've been talking about it for a long time. Woodrow Wilson, Bill Ayers, Karl Marx, Hillary Clinton, and now not Barack Obama directly, but certainly the people around him. Woman you mentioned just about MSNBC, we've all seen that that video that they run on MSNBC. It's frightening. It's frightening how emboldened they seem with using the Marxist rhetoric dogma. I mean, they just come right out with it now. I guess I'm not sure if they just feel comfortable or if they're just trying to introduce these words to a new generation. I don't know what's going on, but they sure seem emboldened. Maybe it's because Barack has been in office for 5 or 6 years now. I'm not sure. But the enablers in the media, they finally got this train going down the track toward collectivism, and they're using the nomenclature in public, and your show description is perfect, you know, in that respect. And again, I don't want us to get bogged down in the details of Common Core, but because the picture is why it's here, not what it's made of. It's here for the express purpose of alienating children. They want to alienate children, not just from the parents, but from, this is the key, from traditional family situations. Right? Common Core, the purpose is to cause children to grow up believing that the state is there to rescue and protect them from parents, because parents will enslave them in a backward, evil, and even violent, selfish set of belief, right? A belief system that includes guns, religion, and Barack Obama is on infamous record of clinging to Bibles and, you know, some of the things that he said in the past. The state is going to rescue children from that traditional belief system. And I will believe that till the day I die. That's what Common Core is in support of. So really, who cares what Common Core is now or in the future? Listen, Common Core could be the greatest thing since Pop-Tarts, and it doesn't matter to me. Or it could be the worst thing since New Coke. It doesn't matter to me. The goal of Common Core is what matters, and that's the reason to oppose it. You know, what they say about Common Core, why it's here, and what's in it, it's irrelevant to me, because after it's ingrained, this is what they say. After it's the law of the land, then it's going to quickly change, okay? It's going to morph. It's a predator. Ooh, thought that up. I'm going to start using that. Common Core is a predator. The kid snatcher. I'm going to use that too. You guys can use that. Common Core is the kid snatcher. Wow, I'm taking that on the campaign trail with me. The kid snatcher. Oh, that's a good one. That's a one to battle the liberals with you. Oh, that's your kid snatcher, Common Core. Here's what I postulate. Okay. One of the most important things that you're going to see, that you will begin to see, Common Core is ingrained, and it's the law. One of the first things you're going to see is the different testing. Testing will be key to Common Core. Kids will begin to test the way we were tested in school. They will call them tests, but they won't be tests the way we think of testing, because leftists do not want kids to be differentiated. They don't want kids to be seen smarter or to have higher grades, and some have lower grades and not be as smart. They want everyone to be on the same level, just the same they want with income and housing and status in the community, blah, blah, blah. Everything has to be standardized, and that includes outcome and knowledge, outcome and understanding, IQ, education levels. Therefore, test results and testing, as we know it, has to give way to what? Philosophy. At first, it'll be very subtle, right? But then it will morph into something that Bill Ayers, for instance, who has written, I don't know if you've ever read Bill Ayers, but I have. He's written extensively about this, and this dude is evil. It'll morph into something that Bill Ayers and a lot of communists, they call it journaling. Have you heard of this word, journaling? You'll see it. Journaling, the word that they use instead of testing. Journaling is where there's no right or wrong answer. Okay? Therefore, you can't have results. You can't have an outcome where one student is, you know, higher or lower. Therefore, there can't be a distinction. There can't be a competition. There can't be a result. There can't be accountability. But most importantly, the people giving the test or the journaling, in other words, the state, you know, the people in charge, they can't be held to account to any standard because there's nothing to measure. Therefore, the state can say anything about the results. Does this sound familiar? It's called statism, communism, socialism. Put any label you want on it. But they can look at the end of the school year and say, look at all the brilliant kids we have. Look at the tests. Look at the results, folks. Look at how well they all did. They're all brilliant. Well, how can you tell? You can't tell. Therefore, they can say anything. It's called journaling. And if you read Bill Ayers or any of these guys, any of these idiots, that's how they do it. And that's the first thing you'll see is the difference in the test. So be on the lookout, says Uncle Rodney. Anyway, let me pass this on to whoever wants to go next.
Okay, I'll take it up, and I agree with you. We've been fighting Common Core, well, since I've been on the show, and Hitler, I use my history as my tool, and Hitler needed to put together his nasty scheme and get people to follow something normal people wouldn't do. And he knew that the generation that he was working with, he had to keep it secret. He could say that the Jewish were bad, but he couldn't openly say they need to be exterminated. So he kind of held that back in the background, and but he also knew that he needed to get the children behind him because the next generation would be the make or break one for him. So he created a Common Core program called Hitler Youth, and it was very, very successful up to the time when they lost the war. And this is what I look at is what this group of people are trying to do. The very same thing, just calling it different names. And if we look at the history of communism, socialism, fascism, they use their children, and it changed the world because they start going and standing up against their parents, and they use that as a tool to destroy what's going, you know, the old school and bring on this new ideal. Thankfully, what happens eventually is that the whole system breaks down. If you look at Karl Marx's ideals and read about what he said, there's one point that he never understands. It's called the human factor. And the primary difference, between communism and the free enterprise system is incentive. You see, here in the United States, we have the incentive that any person can go from being owned as a slave. I mean, Frederick Douglass was the epitome of the American dream. He started life not even owning his own body, and he rose to the top 1%. So in a free enterprise system, it is all up to you how far you're going to go. And nobody will stand against you. In a communist system or fascist or socialist system, you are already destined for what you will do for the rest of your life at a very early age. And there's nothing you can do to change that, because the system is going to tell you that you're going to be a dishwasher or whatever. And you could be Albert Einstein, and you're going to be a dishwasher, because we determined that you are not going to make it. And I don't want, you know, this country stands for freedom. These people who come in here, they don't want you to see that. They don't want to tell the truth. They don't don't want you to know that we as a nation broke away over taxes. We broke away from the crown simply because of taxation without representation. And it was a very simple concept, but it enraged us, because once we came over and we started tasting freedom, you see, we had all been part of that system where we were held back. And then we came in, the Puritans came in, and they sat down and they said, wow, we can pray like we want to. And it was wonderful. Then they went on and they started making the same damn mistakes as the British. You know, they said, if you do not go along with us, we are going to hang you or charge you with something, or we're just going to plain old ostracize you. We're going to take you and send you out. And one of them was a Baptist minister named Roger Williams, who said, good idea. And he sent him and his followers, went about 85 miles south of Boston, and sat down and created a new town that they named Providence. And what he said is that, I welcome everybody from every religion. And his little government he was forming within the state of the state where he was sent was the first one where William stood up and said, we're going to have, no church is going to run our government. There must be a separation. The belief in God is right there. We will never take that away. And we're going to let the different churches choose, you know, they can do as what they believe, as long as it doesn't interfere with the other people's rights. And he was, the first synagogue is also in this place. The place I'm talking about is the smallest state with the longest name, called the State of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. It is there that you can go and see the oldest synagogue in this country. and the birth of freedom of religion. At first, Boston, of course, rallied against it, and there was one woman who kept on going up to Boston preaching the Protestant beliefs, and they kept on hanging all the people, the guys that went with her, but being good, nice Puritans, they always just sent her back. After the fourth time, they hung her as well, and now she is a statue on the front of the State House in Boston. Now, we continued on, and we built from that. And our forefathers had learned the lessons that the original founders of this nation had set forth. And we created a nation out of these basic ideals. Church, it was family, God, God, family, and church. State. And these people, they started out in their little communities and to help the poor, what they did is if somebody was in need, the people together helped the individual, the community. But the person, it wasn't a free ride. It was saying, we'll give you time to get on your feet. For instance, when you wanted to build your house, they had the barn raising ceremonies. But if your kid messed up, they went marching right to your parents' house and said, you got to do something with your kid. So the whole argument that Clinton brought up is invalid. And we went in, 1787, these brilliant people came together and tried to argue what was going to be in the United States Constitution. And, of course, the South wanted this and the North wanted this, and everybody, several fistfights broke out, and all along this old wise man was sitting there holding his cane and one day started tapping it on the ground and a little louder and a little louder and a little louder. And finally he stood up and said, gentlemen, I've listened to you for the last 8 weeks. And he goes, when we were fighting the British to fight for our freedom, before every session we sat down and we said a prayer to God. And he goes, before every session, I want all of us to say a prayer to God Almighty. And you can do it, the way we'll do it is we'll have a preacher from representing each denomination come in and lead the prayer of the day. And it was the first thing that everybody agreed with. So they began, Congress began with a prayer every day. God was the center of our nation at the time, and these were very, very religious people, although the other side would like our children not to know that. But out of it, they took the two most polar opposite people, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams.
I look like we lost Dan. Jennifer, we will go ahead and bring you in. Dan will call back in. It looks like Blog Talk dropped Dan. Jennifer Montrose.
Yes. I 2014, like I said before, we got to get grassroots army. I know that there is stories about how you may not be able to raise enough dollar bills to defeat the incumbent candidate, but we can build a grassroots army. I believe that we can do both, but we've got to get America excited again. We've got to get people passionate again. I know of several different races going on right now that are very, very key. We've got this U.S. Senate race down in Louisiana. There is a U.S. congressional race in District 4 of Nevada, the same in District 7 of Alabama. There's many that are out there. And I believe that if we could start all learning how to sing the same Frederick Douglass Liberty message or message, that we could have a powerhouse of a grassroots army across the United States that is bent on doing all that they can to make sure that we turn the House totally red, true red, not just rhino red, Republican in name only, but we are wanting to reach out and raise massive amounts of dollars to help. If you have a candidate running in your district, you know, give $3, $5, $10. Rodney, I know that you have, right now, I'm sure that you're dealing with fundraising. Is there anything that you would like to share with us that your constituents would like to know where they can, people across the United States would like to know where they can come, can sign up and join to help make phone calls for you, raise money for you, do all the necessary things that they need to do to fight for you, to help you get to Washington, D.C.?
Well, yeah, and you're exactly right. It's two things. You can't win with just grassroots, and you can't win with just money. It's impossible. It's just the fact of life. It's the reality of politics. And if you go to Conover for Congress, that's my last name, Conover, conoverforcongress.com, you can, it's a smorgasbord of Rodney Lee Connell. There's where I stand on the issues. There's some fun videos. There's some serious videos. There's a video of my dog explaining Obamacare, literally. There is a place to sign up to volunteer for any number of things, whether it's online or going door-to-door or shouting out your window, shouting my name. And there's also, most importantly, there's a place to donate, whether you're donating $5,000 or $500 or $5. There's a place where you can put in your credit card and send me money, because that is probably the most important thing. It takes money. It takes money to get the message out, especially in this district, because it is the second largest district in the country. And to get a message out to a district that large and get the word out to someone, any individual, has to hear my message 7 times before they will hear it enough to actually take the action to vote. It costs a lot of money. I mean, especially in California. The media in California is so expensive. And when it comes to election time, when it comes to campaign time, the media companies know it better than anybody, and they just jack up the rates and they take you to town. So yeah, Conover for www.conoverforcongress.com, and give generously and give often, and I'm a good product, and it'll come back to you. I will do one thing, I'll be honest, and That'll be a unique thing for you. One thing I won't do is I won't vote yes on any legislation that doesn't apply to myself. That is disgraceful, and I can't believe it even exists in this country. But it won't exist if I have anything to do with it. So, but we do need good people like the people that are on this show right now that will spread the word. And get people elected that won't sell out. I just can't emphasize that more. I wouldn't be running if the representative in my district wasn't a sellout. I wouldn't. I'd be back doing what I've been doing for 25 years. But somebody has to get in there and do the right thing. I met with several people who I thought might run in this district, and they're not going to run. They're fed up. I'm not fed up. I'm not. I'm very hopeful. I'm as optimistic as I've ever been. I do think that we're sitting in a time that is, we're just moments from greatness. I really believe that. It's not cliche to me. I think we are moments away from the greatest time we've ever had. I think Obama's a wake-up call. I really do. You know, there are people in business that say, rightfully so, that recessions are good for business, and they are. They help you get strong. They teach you what is weak in your business, and they help you thin things out, and they help you rid yourselves of things you didn't need anyway. And you come out of recession a lot stronger than when you went in. And I'm very, very optimistic that Barack Obama really taught us that we've been through a 60-year recession, not a 2 or 3 or 5 year recession. We're in the middle of a 60-year slowdown in our philosophy. We have allowed 60 years of a slippery slope of these leftists injecting their sick philosophy into our lives and into our children and into our institutions. And this is a wake-up call to throw them off. And I'm really hopeful that that's what we're going to do. We'll be right back. Oh, shoot, I did it again.
I love it, Rodney. And boy, let me tell you, and I told you in chat, that's what this show's all about. And I'm going to keep talking about you. I'm going to be talking about you as often as I can because you've made a week a big believer. Now, let me tell you, when you've got the endorsement of John LaRosa and you've got the endorsement of Andy Miller, you already got me. A long time, you already got me. But I am very impressed with what I've seen. And I pass this little piece of information on to every candidate we talk to. Last year on Blog Talk Radio, we interviewed Dr. Adana, who was running for the Senate. And her campaign manager was Larry Nichols. I don't know if you know the name Larry Nichols, but of the Clinton Chronicles fame. He was the one that pushed a lot of that back. And he was asked to be her campaign manager, and here's what he said. He said, "Dr. Adana, I tell you what, I will be your campaign manager as long as you make me one promise. When you get to Washington, D.C., you don't let them pick your staff. You pick your own staff." Right. And so, you know, that's the kind of person that you come across to me, is somebody who's going to pick his own staff, who's going to make his own decisions. You're not going to vote for something that doesn't affect you personally, because, like you said, that's insanity. And we're going to continue to talk. We're going to continue to use your name on this show. I'm going to continue to post Facebook. Let me tell you, I'm looking at your leaderboard. I love leaderboards. I'm looking at your leaderboard on your website, and we've got Joe the Plumber at the top. We've got Andy Miller in second place. We've got John LaRosa in fifth, and my good friend Christy Waters in eighth. And let me tell you, Scott Osborne out in California is going to be working very hard in the next couple of weeks to beat Joe the Plumber, because that's just the kind of guy I am. And I'm going to tell you, you are going to have support right here. If you need anything, you let me know. If I can accomplish it, I will try and do it, because we need a whole bunch of Rodney Conovers. And it's not a personal thing. It's because we need a certain new type of blood in Washington, D.C. We need people that we can have confidence in, that they're going to be real leaders. That's why, and you're in a group of Herman Cain people, Jennifer Montrose, Dan Wilson, Scott Osborne, Rodney Stanhope, who's not able to be here tonight. He's busy. Stacey,
yeah, I know Rodney.
Yeah, we're all Herman Cain people, and we were Herman Cain people because of one reason. We wanted to see somebody in the White House who was a real leader, who wasn't a politician, who wasn't up there to try and con us, who wasn't up there to try and make up excuses, but we had confidence that Herman Cain, if he got in that White House, he was going to make a difference. And we're getting towards the end of the show, and I want to throw that out to you, Rodney. I'm here with you all the way. I'm going to be praying for you. I'm going to be giving you every bit of support that I can. I'm getting ready to move to Texas in about 3 or 4 weeks. We're moving.
Oh, really? Where are you going?
We're going to Dallas. We're getting, you know, Dallas or Texas fought C-Scope, which was Common Core's little cousin, and knocked it over real fast. And we're getting these girls out of the California school districts. We're getting out of California, and we're going down to Dallas. But I am going to still continue to push hard for Rodney Stanhope. I started to call you Rodney Stanhope. Rodney Conover in Congress. I did not realize until you just told me it's the second largest district in the country. That is awesome. That just tells me we got big hurdles to overcome. Something that I want to touch on as we get to the end, and I want to touch on the hurdles a little bit because you touched on this, and I'm a firm believer in this, and Dan and Jennifer, I'm sure when you said that, recognize this. I believe that things are given to us, hurdles are given to us, not to make us crazy, not to make us cry in front of them, but to make us stronger. I'm a gospel preacher. And I always go to Corinthians when Paul said, you know, Christ, three times he said, take this away from me. And Christ said, no, my grace is sufficient. And Paul was the kind of person who said, I jump my hurdles. I look forward to my hurdles because they make me stronger. The bigger the hurdle, the stronger we get. I'm a firm believer that Barack Obama might have been the best thing that ever happened to this country. Because I'm going to tell you.
But it is. It is. It is the best thing that ever happened.
That's right. He has shown the true face of what the left really believes. 5 years ago, they were afraid to say what they really believed. 5 years ago, Melissa Perry wouldn't have dare said that on a commercial on MSNBC. Hillary Clinton barely got away with her It Takes a Village. That caused a lot of controversy. But the left has finally come entirely out of the closet, and they are not afraid to say where they're trying to go. All we've got to do is get the American people to understand where the left really wants to go, because that's what they don't want the American people to see. So I want to pass it back to you, to Rodney, to give your final comments, the last thing you need to say. I want to amen Jennifer Montrose. You know, I hate talking about money. I hate the money part of campaigns the most, but it takes money. So I want to encourage all of our listeners, if you can, go to Conover for Congress. That's Conover for the F-O-R, not the number four, Congress, and donate if you can. If you can't donate, spend some time on Facebook talking about Rodney. If you can't spend time on Facebook, spend it on Twitter talking about Rodney. If you live in the 8th District, man, get a hold of Rodney and say, I can be a street person. I can get out and put out yard signs. I can get out and do different things. Because that's what it's going to take, and I'm giving you my word, Rodney. We're going to keep talking about you until you're in Washington, D.C., and I'm watching C-SPAN, and I see Rodney Conover up there on Capitol Hill. Because
right
we
on,
a whole
my
bunch.
Brother.
I'm going to pass it
right
back
on.
To you and let you give some of your final thoughts, and then we'll pass it around to Dan and Jennifer for final thoughts, and then we'll close the show out this evening. We're going to let us. We got a special guest coming on this evening. Red Skelton is going to come and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance at the end of the show, and we'll close out with that. Rodney, with that, I'll pass
all right,
it back
well,
to you.
You know, I have a lot of fun. I believe in having some fun and joking around and having humor in my campaign. I believe in that. I think people need a laugh here and a laugh there. But I want to get serious, and I want to tell you, my tipping point regarding my campaign and what what the final straw was for me running. I sometimes go down to the VA, sometimes to entertain, sometimes just to visit with people, and I'm visiting a guy. His name's Sergeant Mick, and I don't know him real well, but I know him well enough to call him Sergeant Mick, and he's a World War II guy, and I don't know how old he is, but I'm guessing he's probably about 90. And there's something about World War II guys in that they have a rule, and that is you don't talk about World War II. They came back from World War II, and they saved the world from tyranny, and that's the last they talked about it. And they pushed those memories down way back where nobody could get to them. And they saw things, and they heard things, and they did things, but no one knows, not their wives, not their kids, nobody, because it was horrible. And I was visiting with Sergeant Mick, and we were kind of watching TV. We maybe talking pop politics a little bit, and I don't know why, but Sergeant Mick started talking about World War II, and I wish he hadn't, because he told me a story that I actually hadn't told, and I can't tell you that's me, but I'll tell you a little bit. Sergeant was lost in the middle of the night, and a few soldiers, and they were out of ammunition, and they were very frightened and surrounded, and they killed other men just like them all night with their rifles, with the ends of rifles that you don't shoot with. And it was the worst story that you can imagine hearing. And when he was done with that story, I said, "Why did you tell me the story, Sergeant May?" And he said, "Because I went over there and I did this thing because I wanted them to take our country and ruin it. And wish I hadn't done those things. Because now I see the TV rod, and they're taking our country anyway." And there he was, a grown man crying, convinced that his life was worthless. So I went home, called my friend, Andy Miller. And I said, "You know what? 25 years, I've been writing speeches. I've been going to rallies. I wrote the Rush Limbaugh Show, and I've been on talk radio. I've been people elected. I've been organizing, and I've been helping people write books. And you know what? Nothing worked. It's all for nothing. In fact, things have gotten worse. It's pointless, and I quit. I quit." And he said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm running for Congress, and I'm going to go to Washington, and I'm going to pick up where Sergeant Mick left off, and I am damn sure not going to let him down. And that's why I'm running. And I want you guys, everybody that's listening, to help me." That's my story.
Well, God bless you. I mean, when I was in California, I was volunteering for the Palm Springs Air Museum. I don't know if you've ever been there.
Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, when it was first opened, I was one of the first docents. And I started there for a kind of a selfish reason, because I've always wanted to learn to fly. And I had read a lot about World War II. Had the honor of visiting the American Cemetery in Luxembourg and see General George S. Patton's grave, Normandy. And you start realizing, and I learned at a very early age, when you're walking down these rows of graves and you're looking at their age, they're 18, 19 years old, 17, and every fourth or fifth grave says, "Here lies a comrade known only but to God." And I was a patriot since a little kid, and it welled up my eyes. I cried. I couldn't help it. I just wrote a piece just a couple of days ago when I was using the Battle of the Bulge and how Patton was able to disengage his elements of his Third Army and march them 100 miles to re-engage, to relieve Mitchell's battered bastards of Bastogne and defeat the German Panzer Division that was overrunning them. But it was still kind of like it was in books to me. But then I got to Palm Springs Air Museum, and I have fellow docents who were there flying the B-17s, the P-51 Mustangs, and they were giving accounts of what really happened from their perspective. Some of them were funny. Some of the stories were funny. Some of them were horrifying. This one guy, he's at 25,000 feet, and the bullet takes off his oxygen supply, and he passes out. He wakes up, the plane's empty, on fire. And he tries to get out the front the front hatch, and he gets stuck. And he couldn't get out. One of the straps caught up on the handle. And he finally got it off, jumped out with 300 feet to spare, and just the parachute opened just in time. And he was taken prisoner. Another guy watched his best friend flying in a P-51 Mustang drive right into the ground. You know, these people gave everything they had. And they came back, you know, it was to say, they didn't want to say anything because they saw so much.
They didn't want to remember.
No, they didn't. When you go back and you start really listening to their stories, it is horrific. You know, the amount of, on Normandy, the amount of people who died, you know, or were wounded. And they said it was beyond description. He said, you know, look at people on your left and the people on your right got blown away and you're just running scared. And it was because our nation was behind these people 300%, that they were able to do the impossible. And they did it not once, not twice, but hundreds of times. I mean, look at, you know, Patton, as I said, with the Third Army, the invasion of Normandy. The defenses set up by Erwin Rommel, Germany's best general. And it was a line that was basically impenetrable. But we did it. And it was through sheer American, you know, valor, I don't know what you want to call it, determination. That happened, and it was great commanders behind them. And I can't let them down. I can't let those poor young lads who are now being interred in foreign lands. I can't do it. And Jennifer brought on our show a couple of weeks ago a woman when I was getting down and I was kind of, you know, sitting around and feeling sorry for myself. But she brought on a woman named Monica Morrill, and she is one of the co-writers of the book Betrayed, the story of Aaron Vaughn, as from the view of Billy Vaughn. And I have lost my son at age, his age was 24 when he died. So the first pages, 30 pages, I just was in tears the entire time. And when you're through with the book, and I recommend that you read it, Rodney, because it reveals what this administration has done to our country and our young men, who are young men and women who are fighting over there, and how needlessly their lives were lost because of what this administration did. This administration perpetrated the worst case of tyranny in the history of this country by revealing the SEALs. They should have never been. The Navy SEALs' whole power is secrecy. That's their number one weapon. And before or after the action report, they should never have been mentioned. And Biden is yapping away, saying, you know, how great the SEALs were. Then Obama, against the family's request, takes a photo op. And the arrogance that this administration pulls off is beyond me. And we need people like you who are going to go to Congress and say, but why didn't we come up with answers on Solyndra, Fast and Furious, IRS, Benghazi, Extortion 17, all these things. I mean, there's probably seven impeachable, at least seven impeachable events that have taken place during this administration. And we, you know, the Congress has just sat on their cabooses and done nothing. You know, they have not even raised enough holy cane. You know,
it's beyond me the lack of. I almost said a bad word, but it's just a lack of courage. Where did it go? Where are they? Where are the Ted Cruzes? There can't just be two or three.
Out of
400, there's only two or three? Come on.
Exactly. I mean, Alan West is one of the endorsements on this book. And, you know, he's one of the brave. But,
right.
you know, you sit down there. And I wrote a piece on how our government has betrayed us since Korea. And I got several replies saying, how are you so brave to write this down? And it's like, I'm not brave. I'm telling the truth. I'm sick of seeing our children going to war and being killed for nothing. for a political gain? Give me a friggin' break. And, you know, my congressman won't answer my letters anymore, nor will he speak to me.
Well,
like, oh, well.
So you got that going for you.
Exactly. Now I had the senator, my senator, doing the same thing. And, well, it's like I'm making friends every day here.
Way to go.
But, it's I can't be quiet. I cannot stop saying that, this is wrong, people. Look at our Constitution. Now they took away the filibuster.
Well, that is unreal. That is really unreal.
227 years it's been in existence. It was started by our forefathers. So what is the Senate supposed to do now?
That is a check and balance that is so important that the judiciary is not just put in by, that opens the door to imperialism. When a president can control the courts like that, what do you have? You've got imperialism on your hands. That is incredible. And it's not like the Republicans were going wild and holding up every single. It was just one-tenth of 1% they were holding up, and I'm sure they should have been holding up more than what they were doing. There's no doubt.
Oh, hell yes. I was furious when that went through. I mean, the Republicans have used that threat, the nuclear option, for several years. And that really ticked me off, too. It's like, you don't play with, the reason why our nuclear weapons are still in their silos, and people understand, once you shoot that sucker off, ain't no problem with that.
It's mutual destruction. It's there. It's there to not use.
Exactly. And this administration decided to use it.
Well, this Harry Reid, he is a pure power broker, and he is reprehensible. This is the guy who thinks nothing of going 5 years without submitting a budget. Can you imagine? I mean, we don't even have a budget. We have nothing but unlimited spending, nothing but a continuing resolution to spend money we don't have. Forget about a balanced budget. We don't have a budget.
No, we haven't had one.
Does that?
Since this guy walked in the door.
Right. He has no desire to have any sort of, how can you have fiscal responsibility when you don't have a budget? You can't set a goal. You certainly can't reach a goal if you've never set a goal. What kind of a household would you have if you never set any sort of, how much are you going to spend? Well, I don't know. Let's just go start spending. It's ridiculous. Of course you're going to have deficits as far as the eye can see. Of course, I'm not here to defend Republicans. You know who is the number two spender in this country's history? Republicans. If it wasn't for Barack Obama and the Democrats coming along this past time, it would be the Republicans under George Bush in the years 2000 through 2005. When we had our chance, what did we do? I'm not going to offend drunken sailors by saying we spent like then, but at the time we were the number one spenders, the number one in deficit spending, and the number one adders of debt to the country's debt. And then Barack Obama and the Democrats came along and beat our record. So,
oh man,
they're all guilty.
My big gripe is that we have dead voters. We have people that don't register to vote. We have people that do register to vote that are illegal aliens. We have people that are transients that move out of apartment complex. They don't change where they vote, and keep it. Follow their records with them. We have so much. I will tell you, Harry Reid is champion of voter fraud. Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer, I will call them out. We have proof in Nevada of what happened to Sharon Angle, who ran in 2010. We have proof. They were taking the SIM cards out, the good ones, putting corrupt ones in the voter machine. There were people that were interviewed that did not have the right, the constitutional right to vote. If you are not willing to show your picture ID, you know, I think that we could stop a lot of the dead vote from voting. If we had people that were held accountable, you know, I know that we're talking about in District 7 of Alabama that we need to target the people that have not registered to vote. We have so many people that sat home in 2012. It is time, as I said before, that we as Americans need to get off our couches and go and do our constitutional right, responsibility, and go and vote these people that we know are serious conservatives. We need to vote them in office. Because if you are not doing your part to go and vote, if you're not doing your part to be an informed voter, then I don't want to hear you gripe. You know, this Affordable Health Care Act would not have passed if we had done our due diligence in 2012 and voted and been a very informed voter. But we have too many majority-minority districts out there that people just go and they pull the donkey. And it is a crying shame that we have Republicans and the GOP says if you don't have $4 million, then you're not a credible candidate. Well, I understand we need money, of course, but there are some people that are in office right now, like John McCain. I don't get it. I will say that we as Americans, this is an American issue, not a Republican-Democrat issue, but an American issue. It is a constitutional issue. And we need to get out there and be loud. Squeaky wheel gets the grease, as I say. You know, I know that there is an army on Twitter right now of patriots that are out there reaching out. I know that iCaucus is doing their part to vet candidates in every state because we want to, it's the citizens, the American citizens that we want to rise up and vote people like you in office, and it is high time that we not let the Republican Party roll conservatives under the bus. We know what happened in Virginia recently. We know how a good, solid conservative was left alone, and too many times we have candidates out there that are really qualified to serve, but the GOP will not do their part. And so, you know, we cannot be negligent. We have to, as American citizens, take advantage of our responsibilities that we have and get out there and fight the good fight. If you don't know about Twitter, I would suggest you learn. I will say that there are so many things that we can do. You know, there's so many grassroots activist things that we can do to get involved. And we saw a lot of that when we were out there campaigning for a man who the media would not give the time of day in the beginning until he won the straw poll in Florida. You know, we know from working with Herman Cain's campaign the very valuable, powerful grassroots army and what that can do for a candidate, you know. And I would recommend don't vote for the person that's Republican or Democrat. Vote for the person that stands up for the Constitution, for the person that stands for American principles, that stands up for liberty, for personal responsibility, has respect for life, belief in limited government, belief in the Constitution. You know, we need that kind of candidate in office, whether it be male or female. You know, and we've got members out there that are, you know, that are trying their best, but because it's in a minority-majority district, people want to turn the other cheek. We've got people making backroom deals that say, you know, if you don't mess with us, we'll leave you alone. If you let us go, and we'll leave your little district all to yourself, and it can stay Democrat for the rest of its life. You know, I'm looking at poor infrastructure in certain districts, and I'm like, so, you know, with the progressive role model, how is that working for you? We got the progressives out there that are not doing anything for the people. They're doing everything for their own personal gain. And I am so proud of you, Rodney, for being willing to take on this challenge. We've got too many people out there. They're afraid of what the progressive propaganda and the media is going to come out and try to create all kinds of rhetoric on somebody. You know, you may have said something when you were in high school or something that was when you were in college that got caught on video. You know, I mean, we are all human. I applaud people that say, you know, yes, I have a past, but I've rectified my past, and I'm here to do what I need to do for my country. You know, we had warriors that were fighting in Vietnam that came back and were spit upon. And now we have Vietnam veterans that are coming back, and what is our VA doing for them? What is our current administration doing to protect our soldiers, our men and women out there? You know, we have got to get back. This, we are the United States. I mean, united. We've got to unify. We have to. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And that is not just a sector of the community. When it says we the people, it's not saying we the black people or we the Hispanic people. It says we the people, and that means everyone of all race, of all ethnicity. And if you have earned your right to live here in the United States, have done the proper procedure to become a citizen of the United States, you know, good for you. That is great. But for those that are trying to do it illegally, you know, it's time. Shut the border down. Let's do what we need to do. Build the fence and elect someone like Rodney in office for Congress. Send him to D.C. to fight for us just like we have Ted Cruz.
Amen.
I don't know if I could say it better than that. I wish I recorded that, and then when people ask me why I'm running, I'll just play that recording back to people.
There you go. Well, that's what's
well,
nice
I'm
about
Florida. We've seen District 4 of Nevada get extremely ignored by the progressives, go out and fight. Got a constitutional conservative, you know, a really good lover of the Constitution in America, fighting to win a congressional seat in District 4, and the progressives come out immediately to try to stop it. We've got a good congressional candidate running in District 7 of Alabama. You know, we've got many, many candidates out there that are fighting a good fight. And we as Americans need to say enough is enough. And it's time that we cross those railroad tracks and be willing to go and shake the hand of your neighbor, regardless of what political party they may represent. But we need to come together for this great nation to put God back in the center. And I know that we are a center-right nation at heart. I believe that with my core being. And we have Americans out there that are just dying overseas. We've got people that are standing up for our God's principles that are being shot down. The minute that we decided that it was not appropriate for kids to be able to pray in school, and then they decided that it's okay to have girls going into guys' bathrooms because we don't want to offend anyone if they just happen to be having their girl moment for the day. You know, I will tell you that there's boundaries, you know, that need to be adhered to, and our moral compass has totally gone off the left cliff.
Amen.
Well, that's California for you, isn't it? If somebody would have told you 10 years ago that they were going to pass a law that said, you know, if a 14-year-old boy wakes up one morning and feels like a girl, we're going to let him go into the girls' locker room, you'd have said, that must be a movie, that silly movie that you're talking about. And yet here we are. You know, In our very recent past in California, we figured out that we had a state legislature that was so far left it made Joseph Stalin blush. Honestly, some of the things coming out of there, And the state budget, despite the fact that we have more natural resources than 98% of the countries on Earth, and that we have a powerhouse of labor, and we've got a coastline that is unmatched, we've got the biggest ports in the world, and despite all of that, we have a budget that is billions in the red. How does it happen? Well, it's a state legislature that is so bulletproof liberal that they just pass anything they want. They live on planet liberal. And so there we are in the middle of a governor's race, and we just got rid of a governor who started out good and just ended up bad after we had recalled a corrupt governor that obviously was bad for the state. And so we have another governor's race. Here comes a woman who was the CEO of a really kick-ass company. And for the life of me, I can't remember, was it eBay or was it one of these other companies? Who is she a CEO of? It's slipping my mind now. The obviously pretty smart woman who her specialty was fixing things. She could fix stuff. You got a problem? She fixes it. She takes a large organization and she turns lemons into lemonade. That's what she does. She's just business-oriented, works good with numbers, works good with people. She puts labor and management together, very complex organizational structures, and makes them work. A proven leader. That's one of the candidates. Who's the other candidate? Jerry Moonbeam Brown. And who did our state elect? That's right, Jerry Brown. Not only was he Jerry Moonbeam Brown, he is a proven loser, a two-time loser. He was the mayor of Oakland. What did he do as mayor of Oakland? He ran it into the ground. Do you know that the state had to take over the Oakland school district because it was so bad under Jerry Brown? It literally imploded. The state had to take it over because Jerry Brown, as mayor of Oakland, didn't know how to run it. He's our mayor. And what's one of the bills that he signed? That's right. The bill that allows teenage boys and girls to wake up in the morning and say, you know what? I feel like the other sex today. I'm going to go into the other locker room. That's the world that we live in. Okay? If I went into a studio and pitched that as a movie script, they'd go, you know what? You need to get professional help. That's what you need. We are not equipped to deal with a man like you. Please use the back door and go quietly and erase your name from our welcome ledger, would you? Oh, my word. Did I talk too long? Because I didn't mean to. I just get so riled up when I think about this governor. Oi.
Rodney, so glad that we had you tonight. I'm going to tell you, I really enjoyed this. You know, I'm the same way. I really thought that California by now would have risen up and done something over this bathroom bill. It was one of those things where I was really hoping they'd pass it, so the people of California would know what was in it, because nobody, I believe, most parents in California didn't have any clue they were getting ready to pass this bill, except for those people that really paid attention. And I still really don't think a lot of people know. But I'm like Rodney Stanton. Well, I'm a firm believer that one of these days here soon, a girl's going to come home and say, "Daddy, this boy was in the girl's bathroom, and it's legal." And the fathers and the mothers of this state are going to rise up. I don't think it's over with. I think it's coming, and it's going to be – it's insane. It's absolutely – you know, use the word insane. It is insane that little boys – big boys can go into the girls' bathroom just because they think they're a little girl. what I really think is insane about the whole thing is the whole purpose behind the bill was supposedly to keep little boys who think they're little girls from being bullied. But this only makes it worse. And it's just like Obamacare, and it's just like Common Core. The stated purpose that they give us for the solution, the solution's not designed to fix the stated purpose. The solution's got another purpose behind it. And but I want to thank you, Rodney. This has been a great show. We've had some great discussion tonight. And like I say, we're on board with you all the way. We're going to give you every bit of talking we can do. I'm going to be posting Facebook about you. I'm going to be sharing information. And I want to encourage one more time our listeners, especially to those that are listening to this in archive at some point. That's what's nice about Blog Talk is a year from now we can still be using this. But I want to encourage our listeners, go to Twitter, go to Facebook. You can find Rodney Conover for Congress 2014. You can find Rodney Lee Conover on Facebook. You can find him on Twitter. If you go to conoverforcongress.com, that's Conover, F-O-R, not the number four, but F-O-R Congress.com, you can find all of his social media, his videos, everything. Share. That's what the grassroots is all about. If you can get that word out there, we're going to keep getting the word out there. Rodney's going to keep doing his job, which is to keep giving the message. And we're going to keep doing our job, which is to reshare that message and make sure that everybody we can get hears it. Whether you're in California or not, you can help. Rodney's going to have to organize people down there in the 8th District. There's going to be a lot of on-ground work to get done, but there's a lot we can do through social media. To bring up right name recognition, you know, one of the nice things about the Herman Cain campaign was we got to see some really interesting things. And I learned a lot about name recognition. I learned a lot about positive intensity. And one thing that we noticed that we did, Herman Cain had a historic rise in name recognition. Nobody had ever grown that fast. And we're going to do that again. I just tell you, you're right on the message. And that's what's important. You know, we've got some other shows on this. This Contending for Truth Radio Network. We are not going to have ladies' Bible class on Friday. We're going to be celebrating Thanksgiving. We are going to have on Thursday night at 7 o'clock. I'm sorry, at 5 o'clock California time. We are going to have a Just Cause. They're going to go ahead and go with it, but it's going to be they're going to go back and do one of the best of the best shows. So we want to look forward to that on Thursdays at 5 o'clock, every Thursday night. It's Wrongful Convictions and the IRP6 and Don Miller, who we support a lot. And then on Friday, we'll probably play a replay of Ladies Bible Class. Saturday this week, we're going to skip. Dan and I are not going to do the Saturday Symposium, but we'll be back on the following Saturday. And I do believe we're going to have Gabrielle Saucedo Mercer on with me and Dan. Running for Congress in Arizona, a great woman with a great history, came from Mexico, became a legal immigrant, has a great story, and we're going to talk about that and do that. And then on Monday nights, Rodney Stanhope has his California show and all kinds of things going on Contending for Truth Radio. And as we move the studio to Texas, I kind of feel like Glenn Beck, you know, three years ago, he picked his studio up, and he moved it to Texas from California. He got out of California. And that's what we're doing. I'm going to pick up my laptop, which is my studio, and in a few weeks we're going to be doing this. I'll be doing this from California, from Texas. So we hope that everybody keeps that in mind. Rodney, one more time, thank you. And anything we can do, you
give me
help.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. It was a great time.
Well,
thank you, Jennifer, and thank you, Dan.
Oh, thank you, Rodney.
I mean, you guys are great, man.
Thanks.
We're going to keep on keeping on. I want to give a big shout-out, thank you, to John LaRosa for helping point you out in our little cost, and a big shout-out to Andy Miller, who works a lot behind the scenes, doing a lot of things for a lot of candidates, and just is a great trooper. You know, Rodney, one of the things that Dan or Jennifer, one of them, said earlier, is that Cain train, when Herman Cain got off that train, the train never stopped, and we've kept going, and we're all still united as a group, and we keep doing things, and that's what it's all about. It's about keeping on, keeping on. And, you know, a person who kept on keeping on a few decades back was Red Skelton. And we're going to close the show this evening with Red Skelton and his Pledge of Allegiance. You know, he really says it the way it is. And when, this is what it's all about when it all comes down to it. We say the Pledge of Allegiance. It has a lot of meaning to us. But he talks about our leadership. And it's from the people to the leaders, not the leaders to the people. And I'm a firm believer, Rodney, that that's the kind of leader you will be, a real leader that's proposing solutions. And I'm fully confident that the person that comes out of Washington, D.C., after it's all over, will be the same person that's going in. And I've got confidence in that. And so we thank you. And this has been Contending for Truth Radio. This has been the Parental Sovereignty Radio Show. Every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, join us each week. We thank you. Red Skelton, my friend, we're going to let you close it out, Red. Lead us with the Pledge of Allegiance. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Blog Talk Radio. And
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the 7th grade. I went to the 7th grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher. Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell. He says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic. A state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people. And it's from the people to the leaders. Not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice. The principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance: under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?